The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Who's here with me?
I'm here. What's up, man?
Slick Rick, what's going on?
Nothing. It's been a while. Man, we got to welcome people back with more excitement, more enthusiasm.
Yeah, I have no idea what that was.
That used to be break music for us, actually. I don't know how that got put into the queue as the opening song, but Que Sera, it's what happens when I don't have a computer to work with.
Yeah. Just pretend that that was the most exciting and uplifting song you've ever heard in your entire life. Yeah, I think there was a good minute left in the song. I had to cut it short because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if I should hug a friend, eat some bootios. It's really confusing. Really confusing music. Really confusing moment in my life. So, for anyone who's listening, it's been quite some time since we've had this show. I don't know if you could tell by his voice, but Harry seems a little bit under the weather. I want to welcome him back first and foremost because he's had probably the largest absence of the three of us. So welcome back, Harry.
Thank you very much, Tony. It's good to be back. Yeah, I'm feeling a little under the weather, unfortunately. The holidays, I may have overdone it on Thursday and then residual effects since then.
Shit, overdone is probably an understatement for the amount of food that I tore apart.
Our old producer, the fat-ass champion of the world, because we know he had a good Thanksgiving.
I
was just going to say, I can attest to that firsthand. I actually spent part of Thanksgiving with the champ.
Oh, yeah. Well, how's him and the family doing?
They're good. They're good. Unfortunately, given the fact that he has two young children, it makes it kind of inconvenient for him to be able to do the show anymore. But he knows he's welcome back one anytime he wants to join up.
Anytime he wants to do a long-winded rant about food and tag team champions, he can.
And women's wrestling.
Well, that seems like as good a place to start as any, doesn't it, Tony?
Oh, yeah. Great point.
So why don't we go ahead and use that as our segue right into the show. Tonight's main event, shall we?
Wait, what show? What are you talking about?
Well, there's this thing on Monday nights that we use to revolve this show around. I mean, unless we're just going to kind of sit here and shoot the shit for an hour and a half. I mean, we haven't done that before.
Are you saying we're on a show right now? You and I and Rick?
I know, it's weird. It's been too long. We're out of practice.
People are listening to us?
People have never listened to us, Tony. We've established that long ago.
No, I'm actually surprised we have some listeners. No, what I did want to do, you know, we've caught up a little bit. We've said hi to each other. It's been a few months, you know, no lie, since we've done this show. So I just want to know, amongst the three of us, are we still fans of wrestling?
By and large.
I am, actually. You know what? I have to be honest. I love doing this show. I love critiquing Raw on Monday nights and talking to you guys. But I have to say, taking the break from the show might have actually made me more of a fan, because I actually just kind of got to watch and not worry about, okay, what should I talk about tonight? You know, what should I look for? Let me critique the, you know, I actually just got to be in the moment and watch the shows for a while, where I wasn't worried about, you know, my reaction to it or what I was going to say that night after the show. So I actually think the break kind of made me appreciate wrestling and enjoy it more.
You know, I'm inclined to agree with Rick there, because let's be honest here, we get kind of snarky on this show sometimes, but at the same time, when you have the opportunity to just sit back and enjoy the show for what it is, it allows you to relax and let your mind just kind of flow free while you're watching, rather than, as Rick said, trying to put together all your thoughts for all everything that's going on for the show itself, especially for somebody like myself and yourself, Tony, where we're hosting the show here and we have to keep everything on schedule and on point. We have to try to fit everything into the course of the show.
Yeah, that definitely has a lot to do with it. And the fact that, you know, I took the past few months, ever since football season started, every other Monday I had the opportunity to just watch Raw without having to report on it. And it was a different viewing. I do have to say that the critic in me never truly left. There are still a few things that have bothered me. There was a few Raws that I saw that just weren't all that fun. And I found myself gravitating more and more towards SmackDown, a show that I didn't have to recap at all, but had something going for it that Raw just didn't. And I think it was the simplicity of the storytelling. Still, even with that being said, yeah, being removed from 4-1-1 and from the podcast did bring a very different viewing experience, and I think it helped for the better. So we'll learn tonight whether or not it ridded us of our jaded views or only enhanced it.
Well, I think part of what it is, too, is just, let's be honest, there are times where after critiquing the product week after week after week, you become cynical towards certain things. So it becomes necessary to kind of take that step back and put everything back into focus.
I mean, you know, aside from being cynical, it's just the fact that, like, this is a product that, you know, we've been watching since, I believe all three of us, since we were very, very little types that probably didn't know, you know, words that had more than three syllables. So there is an obvious passion for it, so much in fact that I think all three of us have works in the future to do more with the product, whether it be another podcast or a website that may be floating around and having its own .com. I mean, make no mistake about it, gentlemen. We are deeply entrenched in this business, if that's even what it can be called.
Well, you've had your run at 411 there. Rick has worked for Sean's site. I've done work with a couple local independent wrestling promotions in addition to doing podcasts for a couple of other networks as well. So, yeah, it's more than just a hobby to us. It's a passion.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, the reason why I asked it, the reason why I started the show with that question is I want anyone listening, and us three especially, just to know that, you know, us coming back isn't something that we were contracted to do. No one begged us for it. I mean, maybe one or two people, but by and large, it's been a mixture of a matter of circumstances, computer issues, and just real life getting in the way. But either way, we are back, and I'm pretty fucking excited about it.
And there's her first F-bomb of the return. It's now official. All right.
All right. Leave it to me to make it. Okay, so yeah, as you see, I don't know if you guys can see, but the Raw format says we're going to start with the opening segment of Raw, but I have to change that just a little bit because the beautiful and talented and amazingly stunning Sasha Banks has won her third women's championship, and I feel that it's only fair that we start with that.
I'd like to go first here, if you guys don't mind.
Sure. Let me just set the stage for you guys real quick. For those that didn't watch, we had the Sasha Banks versus Charlotte match for the women's title in the middle of Raw. It was roughly a minute and a half to 2 minutes, I believe, in time because they got counted out. And you heard the wind go out of the arena as well as in me. It just was counterproductive, counteractive. And it was also one of those things where you're like, okay, well, we're probably going to get a match at the pay-per-view, or we're probably going to get one later in the night. And as predicted, Foley came down that a match like this was not to end this way. And we got a no disqualification, no count out, false count anywhere match at the end of Raw. The match happened. It was an amazing match. And although that decision being made was somewhat predictable, the minute you saw that match end in a count out, the first one, you kind of knew it was going this route. Although we have seen Raw, we've seen Sasha win the title on Raw again more than once, and although we have plenty to complain about, which one of us three probably will, in terms of this storyline as a whole, there's something to be said about just the entire moment, and pretty sure Harry can take it away from here.
Yeah, the main event itself sees Sasha actually tap out Charlotte, the bank statement on the floor, in order to regain the women's title here. And that kind of leads me to the point that I wanted to raise here, and that is the problem that I have with this particular division here, and specifically the Raw side of the women's division here, is that the women's title picture has been kind of a case of lather, rinse, repeat over the course of the last couple of months. Charlotte has the title. Sasha wins it on Raw, Charlotte wins it back at the next pay-per-view, and you have to think that this is going to lead to another rematch at Roadblock on December 18th. So my question to you guys is simple. Are you guys okay with the fact that they seem to be stuck in this pattern when it comes to Charlotte and Sasha, where they have their matches on Raw, and then, I mean, to their credit, they're main eventing Raw. This is the second time they've main evented Raw, and they also became the first two women to main event a WWE special as well. Are you okay with the fact that they keep going back to the tried-and-true Charlotte versus Sasha format, or do you think that it's time to kind of step away from this for a while and let it simmer down while working some of the other people they have in the division into the title picture, specifically people like Bayley and Nia Jax?
Okay, well, here's my thing. I don't really mind the whole hot potato title changes so much because the way they've done it is where Charlotte keeps winning at the pay-per-views. And, you know, that's kind of – she has this record of that they're trying to establish of these pay-per-view wins. And Sasha's winning them on Raw. And it's almost – becomes somewhat poetic the way that Sasha lost in her hometown and now Charlotte lost in her hometown. And, you know, it shows that these are the two top girls in the division, top women. They're very competitive with each other. That one's not surpassed the other. One's not better than the other. And it works well, especially considering their NXT history where they were partners, and, you know,
That I don't mind so much. The only issue I really have is that they kind of already set the stage for to challenge Charlotte at Survivor Series, and they also set a stage for Nia to be Sasha's next challenger. And it seems like all that is just kind of went to the wayside to continue Sasha Banks and Charlotte. You know, I would think that if they were going to have this happen tonight with Sasha winning the title again, you know, maybe it should have been Sasha Banks and Charlotte who were the final two women at Survivor Series. You know, maybe Sasha should have took Bayley's place and Charlotte should have just attacked Sasha Banks after that match at Survivor Series. It would have made more sense for the overall story. But now there's like so many moving pieces and so many different, you know, women involved. It kind of takes away from what I think is actually a pretty good story with Sasha and Charlotte, you know, hot potatoing the belt back and forth.
Yeah, I mean, I will give them credit for kind of rewriting what they've mistakenly done over the past couple of months. I do agree that it is somewhat poetic that she loses in her hometown the same way Sasha did in her hometown. I did like that aspect of the story. However, I don't feel like – I feel like, once again, as per usual, there is plenty of other routes they could have gone and they chose not to, which causes the story as a whole to look kind of faulty. I mean, you have Sasha Banks already winning the title 3 times in less than a year. I'm not saying that discredits it to her or to me, but it will to a casual fan. I really believe that. What I take away from these two is that when they're wrestling, and this is a rarity, and this isn't something that I do on purpose. I've just noticed it happening when these two wrestle. You're kind of taken out of the bad, I guess you want to say, the bad storytelling because you're too invested in the match itself. So there's, for a minute, for however many minutes they're wrestling, you're not focused on how they got there. You're focused on what's going on while they're there. And it takes two incredible talents to do that. Like, that doesn't happen frequently. More often than not, you get a match and you're thinking, well, why are they wrestling? This isn't a good enough reason. I mean, you have a upcoming Mark Henry versus Titus O'Neil match coming. They didn't say it, but we know it's coming, about a role in a movie. So no one's going to want to watch that match. No one's going to want to see it. And no one is interested in it because it just there's nothing there. You look at Charlotte versus Sasha Banks. There is so much there to the point where when you finally get to the match, you're enthralled. You're complete. I wish at those moments I could stop typing so that I can watch it. It's one of those matches you're going to go back to watch again. So that aspect of the entire feud is extremely compelling. But there's still something to be said about the fact that, like, I mean, there's circumstances that we have to understand. The reality that Sasha Banks was injured, the reality that they don't understand how long she was going to be out or if she was even going to be out. I don't particularly agree with removing a belt from someone who shows signs of injury because there's ways around it. There's ways that you can work around it. There's a story that you can tell. There's there's video packages that you can do. There's moments that you can create. And there's things that people are able to do to prolong storylines to the point where you don't have to lose a title. You know, it's happened too many times where they strip the person of the belt almost immediately after they find out that they're injured, only to regret it a couple of weeks later. And that's what I think happened with Sasha more than once. So what are they going to do now? What are they going to do after this? Are they going to, similar to what Harry said, is there a rematch coming? I don't think so. I think they're going to continue what they started with Nia Jax and Bayley and Charlotte. But, you know, they've led these moments to believe that there is a continuation. You can have Charlotte say, this is the end of our rivalry. This is the stamp that ends it. But she didn't win, so she's going to want another shot. And if it's at a pay-per-view, you have the WWE stigma of records in your mind where they like making records and they don't like breaking them unless someone pisses them off. So I don't foresee Charlotte losing at a pay-per-view anytime soon. So yeah, I'm not saying they wrote themselves into a corner, but they are going in a cyclical manner where it gets to a point where, yes, I can remove myself from the story and enjoy the match, but once the match is over, I'm like, okay, so what are you guys going to do with it? Because if you recall, this moment where Sasha wins, I believe every single time she's won the title has been a big moment to me, an emotional moment. but it wasn't nearly as good as the previous one. You know what I'm saying? So you're losing luster each time, and that's not a good thing.
Yeah, the shine kind of comes off a little bit once you actually have the title on her and then constantly going back to that same well. The thought that I had was the only reason they went back to Charlotte and Sasha here is because they're trying to prolong the inevitable with Bayley taking the title off of Charlotte probably at WrestleMania.
I don't know if it's just me. I really don't because, you know, we've all been out of the, I guess, the IWC loop. I haven't even been on Yes Wrestling to read everyone. And you've noticed I haven't commented too much either. So I don't know what the grand consensus is, but I don't like Charlotte. I know you're not supposed to because she's a heel, but there's reasons outside of her being a heel that I'm just not interested in. So her facing Bayley for the belt at WrestleMania is not something that I'm all too interested in.
Rick, anything to add to that?
I mean, I disagree with Tony's hatred of Charlotte. I think she's great. I mean, I like her in ring work. I think she's one of the better women wrestlers on the roster. I think she plays her role as heel very well. So it's just two differing opinions.
Yeah, I should specify that I enjoy her in the ring completely. I find very little wrong with her in the ring. I mean, aside from her being freakishly tall, that doesn't hinder her. I mean, like it does a lot of other people. But in terms of character and promo, especially promo, I can't find myself enjoying her. But yeah, no, I do want to specify. In the ring, she's great. Tonight's match was a perfect. I love Sasha. I think she's hot as hell. But I can't, similar to AJ, I can't give her 100% of the credit for a good match because there's another person involved. And Sasha didn't carry Charlotte. Charlotte didn't carry Sasha. They have great chemistry. And, I mean, I love her in the ring. I just don't like her on the microphone.
Well, I think that's a pretty common complaint when it comes to her, though, is that her promo skills, she's lacking that natural charisma that her father had when it came to mic skills, but she got all of his in-ring ability.
But she's got like the Nikki Bella promo style where she yells every other word and pauses at the wrong moment and inflects the wrong words, and it just comes off very, very scripted and unrealistic. So, Rick, where do you think they're going to go from here as a kind of a little bit of a guess? Do you think they're going to go with a Charlotte-Sasha rematch, or they're going to go back to the storylines that they were attempting to create a week ago?
Yeah, that's a tough one. Like, I know they kind of did try to, you know, make tonight seem kind of special as, like, this was going to be the bookend to the feud. But I think a lot of people weren't not expecting Sasha Banks to win. I mean, I, for one, thought for sure it was going to end with Nia Jax interfering or someone interfering to help Charlotte win the match. So I think, you know, with Charlotte, if Charlotte would have won, it would have made sense for that feud to be over. But that Sasha Banks won, you know, I think they might actually have to have a rematch at the pay-per-view just because they fall on this, rematch clause that supposedly every champion has. You know, they always use that crutch to make the, you know, the next title match. And, you know, Charlotte being the losing champion of the deal, I would have to think she gets a rematch, and she'll probably get it at the pay-per-view since that's where her record lies, that she doesn't lose at pay-per-views. So I could see them wrestling at Roadblock.
Yeah, and to kind of look to Rick's point here as well, the other thing that you have to consider is that they only have 14 days between the next two episodes of Raw and then Roadblock there. It's between Survivor Series and Roadblock, it was only 28 days, and that's only four episodes of Raw. And the fact that they've got these pay-per-views so close together now is kind of constricting them in terms of what they can and can't do in regards to their weekly television shows as well. So I don't think that there's a whole lot of time left in order to take it in a different direction. I think they almost kind of have to go with the inferred rematch that Rick was referring to.
Yeah, you know, I will agree with Rick. You know, I totally thought there was going to be interference. I thought someone was going to show up and fuck it all up. That's what I've come to expect. To have it be the way it was, I don't know. I was surprised by the win as well, and the way it went in the crowd with the, you know, the rails. I'm not saying it was like the most creative ending ever, but it was pretty fucking cool.
All right, I believe that moves us on to our next topic. And since you wanted to open the show with this, do you want to go to it now?
Yeah, we're going to just – basically, I just put the bottom up to the top. On the other side of things, on the Raw, we've got the males going crazy. We got the Universal Champion, Kevin Owens, who has his best friend, Chris Jericho. Since we've been gone, this friendship has blossomed over Raw, and it's become one of the better parts of the show on a weekly basis. It's very consistent, very funny. It's Chris Jericho at his finest, and I think all three of us, especially you, Harry, Chris Jericho fan, tried and true, no matter what, have been waiting for. I mean, this is the Jericho that we fell in love with when we were younger. This is a Jericho that it feels like he was just waiting for this moment to happen, to find something that he can truly love, sink his teeth into, and make grow. And he's done just that. And at the same time, I feel, although people may disagree, I feel he has yet to overshadow Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens is still the champion. Kevin Owens is still the focal point. Kevin Owens is still the one holding the belt. Jericho is, by every definition, a co-star. He's so good at it. I mean, this is something that not everyone can handle. You really can't, and especially the writers, which is to say Jericho probably has a lot of input. I can only imagine. I can imagine a writer saying, "This is what we're going to do tonight," and Jericho saying, "That doesn't work. That's not going to work. That's not going to help Kevin Owens at all." You know, like, I know that's hypothetical. I know I'm making shit up, but he just strikes me as that type of performer. So it's really cool to see it on screen.
Just real quick, no, you're not making that up, because if you had the opportunity, yeah, you mentioned I'm the biggest Jericho mark of the three of us here. You've had the opportunity to read Jericho's books. There have been previous feuds in Jericho's career where he's gone up to the writing staff with him and Shawn Michaels, him and Rey Mysterio, him and CM Punk, and they've told the writers, this is what we're doing tonight.
Nice.
Okay, continue.
Well, no, just that was one aspect of the entire segment that I wanted to bring up. But anyways, we open the show with Jericho and Owens doing their little friend thing. And instead of Rollins interrupting, we get Roman Reigns. He shows up and he kind of throws his hat back into the mix, saying that this is going to be – that he's going to be back in the main event, basically. And he gets a shot out of Owens for later in the night. You get this little possible divide between Jericho and Owens. And it looks to me like they're dividing the four into one-on-one for each person. We're getting Kevin Owens versus Reigns, and then probably Rollins versus Jericho for the pay-per-view. Now, apart from the reality that they're basically pushing Seth Rollins aside, do you think that's a permanent thing just for the pay-per-view, and they're trying to sneak Roman Reigns back to the main event? Or do you think this is temporary for the pay-per-view, just to get two marquee matches instead of one?
I don't know how much marquee value Jericho and Rollins still has, given the fact that we've seen it over the course of so many times over the course of the last couple months on Raw. The issue that I have with Owens and Reigns, too, is that I don't care for champion versus champion feuds, and I think the reason for that is you end up devaluing one of the title belts by having that champion lose. And similar to how they've done the unification matches in the past there, I don't see them doing such a kind of match with Owens and Reigns, which almost tells me that Reigns is going to have to drop the U.S. title between now and the Roadblock pay-per-view.
I don't think he drops the U.S. title, though. I think he goes to Roadblock as the U.S. champion. I do think they're going to do champion versus champion. And I wouldn't be surprised if Reigns wins, so he could have the world title and the U.S. title, just to make another Shield fact that, you know, him and Seth Rollins were both dual U.S. and world champions there. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if Roman Reigns wins. And you know, just – I kind of said this to one of my friends the other day. I kind of think Kevin Owens not that he needs to, but I think he will drop the title before Royal Rumble, because I would actually like to see Owens and Jericho interact together in the Rumble, you know, and Owens can't do that as champion. You know, they have that storyline where they're best friends, but there seems to be kind of some some cracks in their armor there, that they kind of, you know, do a little simmer here. They get on each other's nerves. They argue like tonight. They pretty much, Jericho told Owens, he doesn't need him as a friend anymore. And it seemed like, you know, that they were over with. But we got an interview with Owens later saying, you know, he's still best friends with Chris Jericho, that it was just a fight. I think that they continue this on-again, off-again relationship until the Royal Rumble, which I'm not expecting Owens to be champion by the time Rumble comes around, just because I think Owens and Jericho both need to be in that Rumble match to really see their friendship crumble.
Well, I said back when this whole Owens and Jericho best friends thing started that I thought this was going to lead to a match between the two of them at WrestleMania, and I stand by that.
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable. It's going to happen. If it's going to happen at Mania, I think that's great, because this is one of those stories that is very, very, it can be very powerful.
And not to mention, I think that the match with Owens at Mania may end up very well being Jericho's swan song.
his 10th one.
he's like the Terry Funk of leaving the WWE.
I tell you what, though, if Jericho ever, like, if he's really done with in-ring competition, he needs to find the spot on that broadcast booth. Just so entertaining.
That actually did bring me to something I wanted to discuss here. Did you have anything listed for the cruiserweights in your format, Tony? As you know, my computer's down, so I wasn't able to see the format. Did you have anything listed in the format for the cruiserweights?
Well, they're part of the recap, just the grand, you know, culmination of everything of the show.
All right, well, I'm going to actually go ahead and bring one of the things from the Cruiserweights into the forefront here, because he brought up the commentary team there. Is it just me, or did it kind of seem like Brian Kendrick was baiting Byron Saxton into a match possibly to occur on 205 Live?
You know, I'm not going to lie. I was considering, like, I wonder if Saxton would be willing to get in the ring again. But I thought that was just one of those flighting thoughts.
Go ahead, Rick.
I was just going to say, it seems like everybody makes fun of Saxton, though. Like, I'm not sure if this will actually lead to anything. I mean, Corey Graves gets on Saxton's case all night long. Every time there's a heel guest commentator, they love to pick on Saxton. He's like the new commentator to pick on. It's not fun to pick on Michael Cole anymore. You got to pick on Brian Saxton now.
Well, the thing about it is, though, is Kendrick specifically brought up the fact that Saxton used to be a wrestler and that he washed out as a wrestler there, and it just seemed like he was kind of needling him about that at that point there, to the point that I think that it's going to cause Saxton to end up stepping up for himself and challenging Kendrick to the Total Cruiserweight title match on 205 Live.
Well, I mean, if it's going to happen on any show, then it's going to happen on that one. So, yeah.
Is that a match you could see them putting on Raw, Tony?
On Raw, no. Not unless it's a... Because, you see, on Raw, Saxton is not known as a wrestler. He's an announcer, and he's the shit end of that. You know, he's not the good announcer. He is the Michael Cole of 5-7 years ago. So seeing him on a match on Raw would just, no one would buy it. No one would buy into it, and it would make the cruiserweight division look worse than it already does. So I don't foresee that happening on Raw for sure.
I it was kind of the vibe that I got during the course of that, and that it seemed like Ryan Kendrick's focus, while it was on Rich Swann in the ring, and by the way, I just want to say that in an era where a lot of wrestlers don't have one good finish, Rich Swann has two. It just seemed like Kendrick spent most of his time needling Saxton and trying to get him to step back into the ring to me, rather than focusing on the impending 205 Live match.
Yeah, I mean, you could take the commentary as a good or a bad thing. I felt that there was a lot of passion in what he was saying, and it was kind of cool, but the content had very little to do with what was going on in the ring.
Tony, as a PWG guy, how is it seeing people like that were regulars for PWG on a regular basis on Monday Night Raw now?
It's very fun. Also, it's rewarding as a fan because you kind of saw them, you know, and you, I'm not saying you made the decision that they should go up, but it's like seeing someone with plenty of potential and then watching them do great things. I've never once been a fan that says, you know, you never should have left the indies. I've never been a person that loved independent bands and then hated them when they went commercial. I've always applauded success. And if you're in the indies, and you don't at one point in your career want to be in the WWE, then you're probably doing it wrong. I'm not saying that that should be your be-all, end-all, because you got people like the Young Bucks who have no interest. But at one point, that's what you wanted. And to see so many of these people get that chance and get that opportunity, it's amazing. I love it.
Just real quick to touch on the other Cruiserweight match there, since we're kind of going through a little bit of the recap here. Cedric Alexander loses to Tony Nese. I think Tony Nese has just recently signed a full-time contract, so Nese picking up a victory on Raw doesn't surprise me, nor does Cedric losing in his hometown. People from Charlotte were 0-2 tonight. Do you think that that's something that the WWE relies a little bit too much on, people losing in their hometown, Rick?
Well, you know, to tell you the truth, I didn't realize Cedric Alexander was from Charlotte, you know. I don't know much about these Cruiserweight guys, and I think that's a problem. You know, the division hasn't really caught on like they hoped it would, and part of that is there's no characters in the division. There's no character development. There's no stories being told. They just kind of put them out there and let them have a match expecting people to care about it because it's different because they're cruisers. You know, this Tony Nese versus Cedric Alexander, like, why was I supposed to care about that match? I don't know much about either one of these guys. They did something with Alicia Fox was, I guess, she's in love with Cedric Alexander now. I don't know what's going on. This Cruiserweight division needs to be revamped. Hopefully they'll use 205 to explore more of their character and storylines that, you know, could bleed over to Raw. I was actually kind of hoping that, you know, they would have a chance to revamp it and rewrite the whole thing if Kalisto would have brought it over to SmackDown. But, you know, it's still on Raw, and they need to find something to ignite it. They need to get it going.
Well, kind of what you said there as far as them needing to tell more character stories and stuff, I think that's one of the things that made the Cruiserweight Classic stick out as much as it did, is that they didn't necessarily focus only on the in-ring action, although more times than not, the in-ring action was above average to really good. They also flushed out the characters of the people that you were getting ready to see in those prospective matches there. You got to see the passion behind a guy like Cedric Alexander, who dropped 22 pounds just to be able to participate in this tournament. You got to see the long, hard road back to the company that Brian Kendrick took. You got to see what it meant for a guy like TJ Perkins to be not only in the inaugural Cruiserweight Classic, but to come out as the first Cruiserweight champion since 2007.
There are a lot of issues with the Cruiserweights right now. And in the very beginning, I remember writing about it, saying that it just needs a little bit of time, that there is a possibility that they're growing something. Because what how rare is it for us to get an entire roster of new wrestlers? It's almost uncommon unless you've never been a wrestling fan before, where you sit down and you have to find a connection. You have to find a wrestler that you can follow. So typically debuts happen like this. You have a full roster. Someone shows up that's new and either A, meets an established person, or B, meets another person that's a jobber that doesn't exist so that they can get a winning streak so that you eventually care. I fully think that number two never works, but that's what they do. Whether it's a repackaged Braun Strowman, a brand new John Cena, that's what they do. Okay? When you have a division of anywhere from 10 to 12 different men at the same time, you're trying to do that, and it's just impossible because in the Cruiserweight division, you don't have an established person outside of Brian Kendrick, and you can only have him feud with one person, as we've seen, TJ Perkins, and you also don't have a Cruiserweight that can run through a gamut of other Cruiserweights, you know, with a winning streak of like 12-0, because that takes 12 weeks, and what are you going to do with all of the other wrestlers that he beat? You know, so they put themselves in a hole where they didn't allow these people to flourish. They threw them out there in six-man tag matches every week. You're basically saying this is the time where you can go buy a drink or take a piss. And that is so fucked up because these guys – Tony Nese, I love everything that man does in the ring. He's amazing, and not just because we share the same name. The dude, I just like watching him. He's like – he's so crisp and awesome, and his hair is amazing. But, no, realistically, like, you have a roster, but it's a very small one. And unless you're an amazing writer, and you don't know what to do with them. And that's what I've seen since the incarnation of the Cruiserweight division. They have no idea what they're doing. They don't know who they want to highlight. They don't know who they want to put the spotlight on. They don't know who they want to be heel or face. Can you tell me the heels and the face? Maybe now, maybe a little bit, but still I'm not even sure. I don't know. Because they haven't established it, and they have no interest in doing so. According to me, I don't see any interest. When we thought it was going to move to SmackDown just a week ago, I thought maybe that's the best thing for them. Yeah, it's a two-hour show. We might have to cut some fat, but I don't know. That could be the best thing because that writing staff knows how to do – they know how to make the best of the most simple and mundane storylines. And I appreciate that show on a weekly basis, just watching how something so simple turns into something so grand. That's what the Cruiserweight division should have been.
Yeah, I'm gonna take this time to kind of second your whole thought process on SmackDown there, and I think Larry actually has it said best here, and I'm referring to your boss at 401 Mania, Larry Zonka, when he says that SmackDown is kind of the land of the misfit toys, but in 2016 it works.
Yep. I just feel like if you truly look, if you believe in the product that you're selling, and this is not just wrestling as a whole, I mean specifically a character, then that character will get over as long as you truly believe it, okay? Now, there are a few exceptions to that. One of them, namely, is Roman Reigns, because apparently they believe the hell out of Roman Reigns, and none of us do. But what you're doing is you're creating, okay, we're all wrestling fans. The majority of us have the stigma of being basement-dwelling people who live with their mother. If there's even any truth to that, then we need to have some sort of relatability to the characters that we see on the screen. Roman Reigns is not relatable. Guess who is? James Ellsworth. I mean, I can't relate to him, but I'm saying if that's the epitome of a wrestling fan, then that's a perfect storyline to tell. You know, he's essentially a fan getting a shot.
I actually think that Ellsworth is very relatable from a wrestling fan standpoint, and the reason I say that is because the fact that, let's be honest, we've all imagined ourselves as getting that opportunity to have that chance to shine there, and he's had the opportunity, and he's making the most of it.
No, that's exactly my point. Like, he is the epitome of what the WWE and wrestling fans as a whole think other wrestling fans are. You know, when you look at Ellsworth, no one's thinking for a minute that he's going to be actually in any type of match with the biggest champion on the show, but then you watch and there he is and you believe it. But yeah, so So this is the Raw reaction. We're talking about SmackDown. yeah, so back, because I don't think we fully finished on Rollins and Reigns, Jericho and Owens. The idea, okay, so how do we feel about Reigns being back in the title picture? Is that stigma gone where we think that he doesn't belong there? Are we okay with it? Or, again, because to me what it seems like is this is just a little roadblock to, and funny enough, the pay-per-view's name, but to get to where we need to be. They don't want to do Rollins versus Owens again. They don't want to do Reigns versus Jericho. Which I don't know why. I think that would work. So they kind of switched the roles just for a minute. They made Seth Rollins attack Jericho in a parking lot to give that a little bit more of an edge. It makes it different. We've seen Rollins take advantage of Jericho numerous times, but now that he got pedigreed on a car, it's supposed to add a little bit more intrigue, which, by the way, I don't know if you read the Raw report, probably not, Harry, but that segment came off really badly to me. I believe a window was supposed to be broken or two, and they just stumbled around a lot, so it looked like they were trying to add a lot of intensity to something that just didn't work out too well.
No, I think that there was an uncooperative prop car there that didn't give them the response that they were looking for. Like, I fully expected that window to shatter when Seth threw that guardrail.
Yeah,
exactly.
They lost me when Jericho ran away off screen, and Seth Rollins, instead of chasing him, went into the car. and Jericho came out the other side. That was like, okay.
He Wile E. Coyote'd him. Which is weird because it never worked for Wiley.
Can I ask you a question, Tony, as far as this whole thing goes?
Yeah.
Would you have been better off with a four-way for the title rather than going into individual singles matches?
Well, I don't think that they want to give away Jericho versus Owens quite yet. And I don't know if I'd be better with it. I think that would be a pretty cool match, but I think my issue is that we're skirting with the territory of Reigns being in the main event again. And just as much as I dislike John Cena, Reigns is pretty much the carbon copy of the man. So it's just another one of, and again, you know, just to reiterate, it's the character that I have issues with. And Roman Reigns is basically John Cena without the name. So, yeah, that's what bothers me the most, is that he's even involved in this main event when I don't really see an actual reason to be. But, I mean, realistically speaking, the match with him and Owens was pretty damn good. I mean, I got to give him that.
I want to
point out that I believe R-Truth was the third North Carolina native that lost tonight.
Yeah, and I believe he's actually from Charlotte as well, but in fairness, Truth is a long way away from anybody taking him seriously. Real quick, back to Reigns and Owens before we move on, though. They've actually met before, and they've had decent chemistry before, and I don't really have an issue with the matches, and I find myself in a similar situation to you when it comes to Reigns, and that he's in that kind of that John Cena situation there for Raw, where Cena's on SmackDown, that, yeah, the matches are good to are watchable, but so there's no character development.
Yeah. And he's not cool. He's not as cool as he thinks he comes off, or as the writing portrays him to be. It just doesn't come off as good. it's not enjoyable, basically. So moving on just a little bit further into the show, I think almost immediately after the promo, we have a match with Braun Strowman versus R-Truth. R-Truth, again, like I said, lost in quick fashion. And Braun has been a very interesting character since he re-debuted on Raw as a standalone figure. And I got to say, it's been one of the better written big men in terms of squash matches and getting over and being believable and yet still being protected and also at the same time not hurting other characters in order to be protected. But to talk more about that, I believe Rick wants to. So I'll go ahead and give him the mic.
Yeah, well, what I really wanted to talk about is the current Braun Strowman Sami Zayn feud, and I have to say, you know, I'm kind of going back and forth. Tonight, Mick Foley and Sammy had some pretty intense back and forth with their promos that kind of saved the segment a little bit for me. But here's where I was taking issue with everything. Braun Strowman is a monster. He's booked perfectly as this big, dominant, you know, scary man. But to say that booking Sami Zayn into a match with Braun Strowman is a punishment, that kind of rubbed me the wrong way, because it just makes Sami look bad. Because Sammy's a wrestler on the Raw roster. He should be ready to compete against anybody. This was just going to be a match against another wrestler on the roster. But they considered this a punishment. They considered this a harsh punishment, as the announcers would emphasize. You know, tonight, Braun Strowman wrestled R-Truth. Was that not a punishment for R-Truth, or was that just a regular match for R-Truth? Like, are we supposed to think that R-Truth is higher up on the totem pole than Sami Zayn, to where when R-Truth wrestles Braun Strowman, it's just a match, but when Sami has to wrestle Braun Strowman, it's a punishment? Like, you know, that kind of, I really couldn't get over the fact that they're punishing this guy by putting him in a match. And I like Sami Zayn, you know, I think they just really diminished Sami Zayn. But, like I said, the promos tonight kind of saved it a little bit with the way Mick Foley was just so, you know, adamant about how I like the way Mick Foley put it, that Braun Strowman's not a competitor. He's not a wrestler on the roster. He's a monster. And, you know, he told Sammy, you can't beat Braun Strowman. It's just physically impossible for you to be able to beat Braun Strowman. And I don't so much take issue with that assessment by Mick Foley, because when you look at the two, I mean, and when you see what Braun Strowman can do, it's like, well, yeah, you know, Sami Zayn's not going to be able to beat this monster. But I think, you know, I think when Sami does finally give it his all, and I don't know if the ending, I don't know where the end game's going to be in this feud. I don't know if Sami's going to conquer the monster and have a David Goliath, you know, victory over Braun Strowman. I'm hoping that's where they go. I think that's where they need to go. Or I don't know if Braun Strowman just devours Sami Zayn and moves on to the next victim. But, you know, we'll see. But, you know, that's the kind of thing with wrestling. You kind of – it's just an ongoing story. So, like, when you first see something like that, it leaves a bad taste in your mouth before, you know, you allow the story to kind of – develop and evolve to where, you know, it actually is kind of getting intriguing and it might make sense in the long run. So that's where I'm at with that.
If you watch Holy Foley, if you've had the opportunity to do so, you find out that Mick's kids are big fans of Sami Zayn. And Sammy's mentioned Mick's mentioned the fact on episodes of Raw before that one of his son's favorite wrestlers is Sami Zayn. I think that this kind of angle right here is just a way for Mick to work with Sami on an extended period. And I do think you're right in that I think the logical end game here has to be Sami Zayn pinning Braun Strowman.
Yeah, that is what it should end as. I guess I have to agree with Rick with regards to there's some problematic things with this feud wherein you look at the promo tonight, and it was full of fire. Sammy got to say his piece, didn't look like a bitch, wondering why you're trying to protect him when he is a wrestler, and he knows what he's doing. He signed up for this. Foley, as the caring grandfather figure, kind of comes off hokey, mainly because it's Mick fucking Foley. You know, he's harped about how devastating the Hell in a Cell match is. He's protected the women, and now he's trying to protect Sammy. Just seems a little too linear to give credit to Sami Zayn. I don't like it. And then there's the idea that you're punishing, you're punishing Sami Zayn for losing at Survivor Series. I'm pretty sure he wasn't the only one that lost at Survivor Series, so that was a little weird. Of course, you have the idea that Stephanie doesn't like him, But again, where does that come from? Why is that even a thing? So there's a lot of things like where you look at this story on the surface, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. But if you really look at it, it's not all that well written. You shouldn't be. Yeah, Braun is a monster. So what makes any jobber that you threw at him any different than Sami Zayn? And again, to Rick's point, what makes R-Truth any different than Sami Zayn? It just doesn't. There's a lot of little mistakes that they're making with this storyline. So the only good thing that could come from this is Sami pinning Braun and getting that David over Goliath moment, which I don't believe is going to hurt Braun. Braun has. I want to say he's survived the squash booking, which is so rare. We've seen it so many times. Ryback is probably the most recent reiteration of it, and it didn't work for him. It didn't work out at all. these never work. So to see Braun come out of it pretty much looking great, very surprised, very, very surprised and happy for both Braun, the character, and the guy behind him, because he's one of those guys that could have easily gotten fired, and it wouldn't have been an issue. But he did something. He's compelling. He's very vicious. He's got this character. He's fast, and he's growing. I mean, look at Braun from when he debuted to even the smaller squash matches, which show him doing like four moves. There's fluidity there that wasn't there before. So that I have to greatly appreciate. But yeah, the whole Sami thing, if there's anything good about it, it's going to be him being able to eventually pin Braun. So we've talked about the Cruiserweights. We talked about Braun. I want to do a couple more things on Raw that were just some quick things to talk about. Actually, just two segments, actually. And then we'll close it up with Heyman. Our reaction, I think, is a good thing to talk about Brock versus Goldberg and leading into Heyman's promo tonight. And then close it up.
Tony, if you don't mind, I'd like to take Harry Kitt here.
Yeah, sure.
All right, since we haven't discussed it yet, and you mentioned that we had only a couple other little things to discuss on, I guess Harry's hit's going to focus on Enzo and Lana. And I'd imagine this was one of the things that you were going to discuss in our recap.
Yeah,
and the reason I want to focus on this here is I kind of want to take you back to last week, and I want to get your thoughts on that whole Enzo being naked backstage segment there. Do you think that this is a sign of them starting to push the borders maybe a little bit more on the TVPG thing?
Not necessarily. I think what it is they're letting Enzo be Enzo. You know, tonight he made a little joke of stuffing Lana's turkey. I thought that was a bit risque for what they're trying to, promote themselves as. But I don't think they're saying, hey, let's push the envelope. They're saying this character kind of lends itself to pushing the envelope, so go ahead, you know? So it's not a deliberate display of, you know, anarchy towards the rating that they have, as much as it's just letting that character flourish the way only he knows how. It's similar to letting The Rock do whatever the hell he wants, and I've compared him to The Rock before. Just go out there. Just do your thing. And we'll deal with the repercussions if there are any, you know?
Well, that was kind of what I wanted to talk about, was the repercussions of that, because I seem to remember a pretty even reaction to that segment last week with Enzo's situation backstage there, and that there were a lot of people who enjoyed it, but there were a lot of people who kind of took offense to the fact that that kind of a segment aired on what was supposed to be a TVPG show.
Yeah, well, people who take offense to that are the people that will complain about everything.
Is the logical payoff to this big cast beating Rusev?
Yeah, I don't see them going elsewhere with it. They're not going to let Enzo do it, obviously. this isn't another David and Goliath story. Enzo's never been portrayed as a great wrestler like Sami has. Enzo's Enzo. He's all flash. So I don't foresee him doing it. But, yeah, I do think it's an eventual Rusev versus Cass moment. I don't know where it goes from there. But, yeah, this is one of the two segments that I wanted to talk about. Enzo and Cass have kind of been watered down over the past couple of weeks, which kind of bothers me. Because remember, they came out with fire. They came out every single week. They had something hilarious to say. So I'm kind of disappointed. But at the same time, it's a temporary thing. It's only a matter of time before he makes one joke and I'm back on board. So, but Rick, what do you think this is too far? I mean, you have kids. You have a slightly different mentality than us. Then again, I've seen your kids do their own wrestling moves and win tag team championship belts. So maybe they're right on the same page. But
yeah.
Do you find this distasteful?
Oh, I'm a horrible father when it comes to things like this. I had my little girl saying shithead the other day. I was just like, say it. She's like, shithead. I was like, all right.
Perfect.
No.
Okay. So maybe Rick's not the best. Maybe Rick's not the bastion of common decency that we're looking for here, Tony.
What I would like to say about this, though, is I think this is actually a start in – I mean, not just a start. I think they've kind of been hinting at this for a while. Just the fact that, you remember, Big Cass was in that fatal four-way to crown the new Universal Champion, when Kevin Owens won that match. I think they will eventually start having – the tag team of Enzo and Cass won't be so much of a tag team, but more of the Big Cass singles push with Enzo being his hype man, or Enzo coming out to the ring and being in his corner. I think this will lead to Big Cass versus Rusev as Colin Cassidy is going to have to, step in and help his little buddy out. And I mean, once he gets in that single suit at Rusev, it'll just be a matter of time before a mid-card title, reign comes in. I could see Big Cass winning U.S. championship off of somebody in the future. And just from there, I don't really see Enzo and Cass as much of a tag team in the tag division. I just see Big Cass as a singles wrestler with Enzo as his in his corner.
I have a funny feeling I know where the other quick hit is going, and I kind of wish Jimmy was still around to handle it because he totally would.
Yes. The only other segment on the show involved a tag team that I'm heavily invested in for more reasons than one, namely because Cesaro is awesome, but also because I have him in my fantasy wrestling league. We had bar time with Sheamus, and it was not as cool as one would assume. This is one of those segments where people are going to either really love it or really hate it, and it harkens to the, to the moment where it calls back to ACA and their little bar fights and whatnot. I think the issue that I had with it was basically the directing, which is something you don't often say when watching wrestling because the cameramen have one job. But when you set two wrestlers in a quote-unquote real-life situation and it feels as hokey as this one did, it's kind of crappy. And it really does remove – not only does it remove you from the segment, but it reiterates the fact that wrestling is fake. So to set the stage, Sheamus is drinking a beer. Cesaro walks in and orders a martini, shaken, not stirred, a la James Bond. They talk about how this is the last time they're going to team up, and they're so happy about it. They speak about how if they actually gotten along, they'd be a formidable tag team, and they'd actually make waves. And then some random patrons who apparently are wrestling fans, or at least enough to watch them but not know their names, talk some shit, and a bar fight ensues. It is one of the crappiest bar fights that I've seen as far as on film. For great examples, watch A Bronx Tale. but this one tonight, it didn't work for me, mainly because of the directing. You had when the camera shakes every time a wrestler does an impactful move? They tried to do that a little bit, and it came off weird. Then you had a tearaway wall where Cesaro threw someone through it, and there was an entire other bar of patrons. And then I think what bothered me the most, there was like this cut scene every, I want to say like 3 seconds, of like 3 or 4 people laughing at Cesaro and Sheamus. that were very obviously not doing that at that time. It was just, it's like editing 101. It looked like two different time frames sliced together. It looked like a really horribly put college video. Like, I've seen porn directed better than this, and it just, it came off really bad. Like, you see a scene, and then you have a completely other scene of people laughing at him. Those people were in the first scene. They were there. I saw them. But it was completely, it was just really badly put together. And, of course, this could be me tearing it apart for no reason, because the idea is Sheamus and Cesaro are a team again, and they may just get along a little better this time, which I love, because they deserve it. But if I'm looking at this segment as a standalone piece of art, I guess you could say, it was shitty.
Yeah, objectively speaking, the segment wasn't entirely a home run or anything like that. But at the same time, if this means we're going to get more Sheamus and Cesaro coming down the road, and specifically, I see them being the team to end the New Day's reign.
Yeah.
Especially if this gets them back on the same page.
Right. I think on paper, I think, you know, reading the script and what happened, it was fine. It was actually pretty good. You know, they're sitting at a bar, talking about how they hate each other, but, you know, they're impressed of what they did at Survivor Series. You know, they actually worked good as a team, and they realized that they worked good as a team. And then whenever they, you know, the bar patrons start getting on them and egging them on, you know, they work together to beat them up, solidifying that they're going to stay a team. On paper, it's good. You know, it's actually, I like what the story that they're telling. I like that Sheamus and Cesaro are going to continue to be a team, and that's because I got Sheamus on my fantasy league. But the whole segment, you know, it just came across as, you know, obviously fake. You know, which we know wrestling is scripted, but it's just, I've seen, and I think it's just hard to do these outside segments with actors and have it look believable, especially in the wrestling world, apparently. I mean, but TV shows and movies can do this, no problem, but I don't know. It did look kind of hokey and bad and fake. But at the same time, I'm not going to sit here and say I didn't like it or say that it was, you know, complete piece of crap, because I just kind of removed myself, you know, from what the bad acting and the bad scenery and the bad segment, and I'm just more focused on the story, and, you know, I like that aspect of it.
Yeah,
let me ask you.
Let
me ask you a quick question here, Tony.
Yeah.
In regards to the whole segment there, we didn't touch on the New Day title defense against Gallows and Anderson. Nobody thought Gallows and Anderson were ending the New Day's reign this close to the demolition run. Do you think we see Cesaro and Sheamus end the run at Roadblock, and then that's what causes them not to get the demolition record?
Well, when's Roadblock?
The Roadblock is in 20 days, which I believe is 2 days before the record.
Really?
I think the record
17.
They said 17 today.
All right. So then Roadblock will be right after the record then.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's breaking the record. And at this point, there's really no reason to break the record. I mean, they don't even like Demolition. And this is the same company that ended Brock Lesnar's record just because they were mad at him. So, and AJ Lee's, which I'm still bitter about.
I would just like to point out something, and I said this on our on the Yes Wrestling Raw thread. The record would have been broken by now if it wasn't for the primetime players' little one-month title reign. Because remember, they beat the New Day for whatever reason, and the New Day just came back and won the titles, like, right afterwards. That was kind of a wasted title reign from the primetime players that did. I think the justification was that Titus O'Neil had just won some kind of Father of the Year award, so they wanted to capitalize on the publicity by making him a tag team champion, and then afterwards the New Day just won the titles back. But if it wasn't for the damn primetime players 1 month title reign, that record would have been broken by now.
Rick, I'm afraid we're going to have to put you in timeout because I'm pretty sure we have a moratorium when discussing anything primetime players related on this show.
No, I agree with Rick. It would have been, but it's not. No, they're not. The record is not going to be broken. The match itself was kind of a means to an end, you know. And again, they gave Gallows and Anderson just enough credibility to lose. So I don't know what they're doing with them.
Honestly, at this point, Gallows and Anderson would be better off shipped to SmackDown, and then you could send somebody like the Usos over to Raw.
Well, that wouldn't be bad. You think they're going to have a draft in the middle of the year?
I do, actually. I think that would be the best thing for both brands in order to freshen up some of the mid-card talent that is kind of stagnating there. And I specifically refer to the Usos as being the team to switch over for Gallows and Anderson because the Usos have that quick pinfall victory over the New Day at Survivor Series.
Speaking of Survivor Series, they had a hell of an interesting main event. 12 years ago, Goldberg was signed with the WWE, but he was on his way out. Rumors started flying that Brock Lesnar wanted to go to the NFL. So he, too, was on his way out. And at WrestleMania 20, both of these guys went head-to-head in front of a crowd that knew exactly what was going on. They booed the ever-living shit out of both of them. To make matters worse, the referee was Stone Cold Steve Austin. So never have I seen, or very rarely have I seen, a referee get more of a pop than either one of the contestants involved. Goldberg won. Brock Lesnar flipped off the crowd. Everybody got stunned. And we didn't see either one of them for a very long time. 12 years later, Goldberg faces Brock Lesnar at Survivor Series. And it's meant to be a fantasy warfare, an epic showdown, something for the ages. You see videos of Goldberg preparing. You see goosebumps on his arms when he cuts a promo of returning. He's going full-fledged face, saying that he's doing this for the kid. Brock Lesnar is his normal badass self, saying he doesn't give a shit about Brock, and tells his wife and his kid to go hide and not watch the match because he's going to tear him apart. The bell rings. A minute and a half later, Goldberg pins Brock Lesnar, and that's all she wrote. So I want to know both of your guys' reactions to the main event, to the decision, and where you think where you think they're going from here.
Well, now that we know, and we'll get more into it once we discuss Heyman's promo tonight on Raw. Now that we know that Lesnar's going to be in the Rumble as well as Goldberg is, I think that this kind of confirms the suspicion that this was a way to delay the inevitable full rematch by having that quick match at Survivor Series and then going to WrestleMania 33 for the actual rematch. The problem that I have with that concept, though, is that you took the main event of what is supposed to be the fourth biggest show of the year for you, and you flushed it down the drain by having it only last a minute and 26 seconds. And I get the whole UFC aspect. I get the fact that a lot of fans in, like, combat sports and stuff know that main events end quickly, but that's not something that you're accustomed to in wrestling. So I think in addition to the shock of it ending that quickly, you had a lot of pissed-off fans that were expecting more for either the network subscription that they paid for that match, to see that match, or for especially those that ordered it on pay-per-view.
Well, Rick?
I wrote my first article for a wrestling website about Brock Lesnar and about how he ended the Undertaker's undefeated streak. And Tony was actually my proofreader, so he knows where I'm coming from with this. But, you know, basically my article boiled down to this. You know, everybody was kind of upset at first because they thought the Undertaker streak was supposed to be used to build up a new up and coming wrestler. Who know it, whoever would beat the streak would be pretty much made in the WWE. And my article just focused on how, you know, Brock beating the streak actually makes Brock a bigger commodity to make somebody, because, you know, he beat the streak, then he destroyed John Cena. You know, his victory over Randy Orton, just his total warpath after defeating the streak was just so impressive. And he's just so much more, you know, intimidating and impressive than the Undertaker these days, as far as, you know, because of age and looks and everything, that whenever somebody actually defeated Brock Lesnar, they would be made. I mean, you have a brand new star, and then they went ahead and had Goldberg beat Brock Lesnar, which kind of just deflated my whole argument that, you know, Brock will make the new star of the WWE, and now Goldberg beat Brock Lesnar. And, you know, when I saw that, I was just like, couldn't believe it, you know, because I don't see Goldberg hanging around to help, you know, pave the way for the future. You know, they kind of took the wind out of the sails of Brock, you know, because now, you know, you kind of made Brock human, so that when someone does beat him, you know, Finn Balor or somebody, yeah, it's still impressive, but it's not as impressive as it could have been had you had Brock maintain that undefeated, that war streak, that war path he went on after beating The Undertaker. You know, so I think they kind of messed up what they could have had for the future in hopes of just, you know, developing this story between these two, I guess, legends or old-timers.
Yeah, I think what they're referring to is that aura of invincibility that Brock had is gone now after getting, let's be honest here, lit up in a minute and 26 seconds in that match against Goldberg. And that was kind of the point that I was making when I was watching the pay-per-view originally with friends, was that all of this work that you've put into building Brock to be this big thing that once somebody beats him, it's going to be huge for them. You use it on Goldberg.
Well, I guess it's just a matter of whether you're willing to or able to divide any and every Brock Lesnar program from the rest of the show, because they do transcend any other program that's happening. I mean, you're not going to see him wrestle R-Truth to prove that he's a big badass. I had mixed feelings about the ending. It was cool to see. I mean, it was completely shocking. It was not something that was expected. And for that aspect, I enjoyed it. And also the reality that maybe humanizing Brock isn't such a bad thing. Because I'm not saying it's going to happen, but if it were to happen, then you may be able to get matches that we haven't seen before. Because prior to this, you would think it would be impossible for him to go one-on-one with someone that we may want to see, but likely won't because of that. So, like the promo tonight, which is what we're, you know, going to eventually talk about, Heyman said that Brock now has something to prove. I don't know what that means, but it's possible that it means that you may get a match or two of Brock, you know, with someone else, causing some damage.
I think it has more to do with the fact that he's having Lesnar enter the Royal Rumble, because if I'm not mistaken, this will be Lesnar's first time in the Rumble since he came back in 2012. And the specific reason that Lesnar's entering the Rumble is because he wants to eliminate Goldberg.
Right. So neither one of them are going to win.
But no, I agree with you, but if you recall, there was the closing line that Heyman had that said there was one beast, 28, and I forget the word that he used, and one victim, clearly referring to Goldberg.
Right.
Rick?
How do you feel about Heyman crying?
Look, I think the tears were a bit much, but I wasn't so much focused on the crying as I was the words. And I think Heyman's promo really it really kind of saved, you know, what I had thought, you know, what my initial reaction, me not liking that Brock Lesnar lost to Goldberg. I think Heyman's promo really kind of helped, push me over to kind of accepting it, to kind of agreeing, you know, maybe this will be for the best. Maybe this will be interesting. I like the way he said, you know, there's no excuses. You know, what can I tell you? We took him lightly.
Yeah.
We didn't think, you know, we thought this was going to be an easy payday, and a spear right out the gates just broke his ribs. You know, it's believable. You know, it does have an element of realism to it. It has an element of, you know, Brock's while losing that fast, a minute and 30 seconds is kind of embarrassing and makes you look bad. I mean, just think of it as, you know, he got speared right away and his ribs broke. It's like, you know, what else could you accomplish? What else could you expect? You know, I liked what Heyman had to say, and I think his promo really helped save the whole feud between the two, in my eyes.
Well, I don't think there's any question. There's no better spinner of things than Paul Heyman when it comes to pro wrestling's history, and I think he's always been that guy that's been able to make the best out of a bad situation. I still think that there's going to be an argument for both sides of what happened at Survivor Series. And honestly, I think that that's actually a good thing for the WWE in that it encourages discussion. Rather or not, it upsets people to the point that it's what the announcers say. If you're spending $70 for a pay-per-view in the modern era, it's kind of on you at this point.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure.
I mean, There are a bunch of alternative outlets to be able to use the network via cell phone stream or video game system or smart TV or whatever have you there. That, realistically speaking, a $10 network subscription isn't out of the question for most even casual wrestling fans. So if you paid out of pocket the $60 or whatever it was for Survivor Series, then you're kind of looking at yourself in the mirror like, why the hell did I just do this? But at the same time, you have no one to blame but yourself for that expanded price range. I'm going to be curious to see how they interact at the Rumble, and also I'm going to be curious to see what Heyman has to say between the two of them on the road to the Rumble as far as how much interaction they have on Raw going into that Rumble. Hello.
Sorry, I was mid burp. anyways, okay. Well, I mean, that pretty much wraps it all up, right?
Real quick, couple predictions for the SmackDown pay per view. We won't do all of the matches. I just want to get your predictions on the big matches here. First of all, AJ Ambrose, who walks out champion.
I'm going with AJ.
Rick.
Yeah, AJ.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that if anybody to take the title off of Styles, it's not going to be Ambrose. I think Ambrose is going to end up sidetracked into a feud with Ellsworth sooner rather than later, honestly. Who's AJ's challenger at the Royal Rumble? Do you think it's Undertaker?
Well, you know, now with Undertaker returning, it wouldn't surprise me. Yeah, I'd sign up for that.
I don't know. I don't know if Undertaker might have more of a beef with Dean Ambrose since, you know, he was going to take – I mean, I know they ended up winning and everything, but Dean did come out there and helped Raw powerbomb AJ into the announce table. I think Dean owes Undertaker a soul or something for doing that or for Team SmackDown.
Yeah, I was curious as to why there was no follow-up between Taker and Ambrose on SmackDown after Survivor Series for that. I was wondering that same thing myself, because you would have to think that if there was anybody to blame, I mean, Styles himself as well for originally attacking Ambrose, but Ambrose got eliminated and then came back out and ensured the elimination of one of his SmackDown teammates. So I was curious about that.
Yeah.
Becky and Alexa.
This one's a bit tougher because, Becky's going to win. I think Becky's going to win, but Alexa's really been impressing me. And it goes to show that there's some good stuff out there, Harry. I'm going to visit your town real quick.
Alexa's from Columbus, not Cleveland.
Well, I just assume that you're close to everything in Ohio. I mean, what is it like? 500 square feet total.
Other side of the state, about 3.5 hours away.
See, to me, that's not far.
Well, that's because you live in California.
My wife had a friend come over, and you know, she happened to mention that she was from Ohio, and I was like, "Oh, you're from Ohio? Do you know Harry Broadhurst?" And she looked at me like, "I don't know every single person in Ohio."
who did you pick, Rick?
I picked Becky.
I'm actually going to stand alone here then. I think Alexa walks out of TLC as the women's champ, the SmackDown champion.
Well, I wouldn't be mad if they did it.
All right, the last one I want to ask you guys about here is, who do you think wins Alpha and the Family tomorrow, and then who wins between Slater and Rhino and the winner of that match? Rick?
Man, this was really, really difficult for me. A part of me thinks that they'll have American Alpha win and kind of hotshot kind of jump the gun on the Orton versus Wyatt after they lose the tag match, just so they have another match to put together for the pay-per-view. But, I mean, if I'm going to go with how I would book it, I think the Wyatt should stay together. Like, Orton should continue his being a member of the Wyatt. I think they should defeat American Alpha and go on to get the tag titles from Rhino and Slater.
Tony?
I think that Orton and Wyatt are actually going to be together for a little bit longer. So I see them winning it. I don't think they're ready for American Alpha to be at the top yet. And then I see Slater holding on to the titles.
I love how Tony took a long walk down a hallway as he's continuing this conversation.
What I do. Always moving.
With no pants on.
I'm going to say that the Wyatt family win this match, and then Slater and Rhino walk out of victory at the pay-per-view.
Okay.
All right. I just wanted to toss out a couple predictions there. We'll bring back the actual prediction segment that we have for the Roadblock pay-per-view in 2 weeks.
Cool.
All right, I think that takes us.
Yeah,
I think this is the part where I take over.
Yep.
Hey, Rick.
Yo.
Been a while since we've done this. You ready?
I'm ready.
Favorite match or moment?
The women's main event. It was spectacular match. I mean, Sasha winning the title was a surprise, and you know, it was a good moment to have Ric Flair come out there and everything. Yeah, I have to give it to those two.
Least favorite match or moment?
You know what? I don't like the bait and switch at the beginning. I don't think it was necessary. I'm talking about the girls coming out and getting a double count out, and then Mick Foley restarting the match for the main event. I mean, I think there's enough there in that feud to just have a no DQ, no count out, false count anywhere to end the feud announced. You know, that could have just been the match made to begin with. You know, I think it was really unnecessary to have that bait and switch. So to me, that was kind of a waste of time. So I'll just give that as my my least favorite moment.
All right. How about your overall show rating?
Are we still doing numbers, or are we going to do letters? I know we go back and forth.
We still do numbers.
Numbers. You know, I'm going to give it a good rating since we just came back. I'm going to give it a 7. That's good. That's what it deserves.
Who's your MVP for tonight?
I'm gonna give it to both Sasha and Charlotte. The two girls put on, they closed her so well. They put on a great main event. I think they deserve it.
Welcome back, homie.
It's good to be back.
Nah, I'm back. You're exactly right. If ever there was a song for us to open up tonight's show with, Eric Bischoff's WWF theme song would have been perfect. I miss that song. That was one of my favorite themes. All right, Tony, you're up.
Yo.
Favorite matching moment?
Sasha Banks versus Charlotte, the second one.
Least favorite matching moment?
Russo versus Enzo, because it was hardly a match. And anytime a man gets kicked in the balls, I feel very, very sad.
At least the kick looked good. I mean, there are a lot of times where these low blow finishes look like crap. This one looked like he punted him square in the balls.
Oh, for sure.
There was some actual anger behind that kick.
Yeah.
How about your overall show rating?
I'm going to go with 7 out of 10 as well. There was a few matches that were hardly matches. They ended really quickly. That kind of hurt. It was Braun, the first Charlotte versus Sasha, and then Enzo versus Rusev. And then, you know, really it was, I want to say it was a two-match show with Reigns versus Owens and the main event. So 7 is a bit too generous, but, yeah, it is our first show back, so I'm feeling kind of generous.
Who's your MVP?
Sasha Banks.
All right, Rick, you know what to do.
Flip the script. All right, Harry. What was your favorite match or moment?
I'm actually going to go with moment. I'm going to go with Sami Zayn's promo. And the reason I say that is, yeah, he's always been known as the underdog from the underground, but this establishes that even though he is an underdog, he's still willing to fight those who outnumber him or those who outsize him or those who have any kind of advantage over him. He's not afraid of anyone, and he's letting Mick Foley know that Foley doesn't have to fight his battles for him. Sammy's a grown-ass man.
What was your least favorite match or moment?
I'm inclined to agree with you on this one. I think the bait and switch for the women's match kind of rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, and I think it was a quick way to upset that crowd before Foley came out to make it right. So not so much the Foley part of it, where he actually came out and announced the fact that it was going to be false count anywhere in the main event, but more so the decision to have them go to the double count out in the first place.
And your overall show rating?
I'm actually going to go a little bit lower than you guys for the reasons that Tony mentioned there. The fact that there were a couple of squash matches that honestly, either between being actual squash matches like Braun Strowman and R-Truth was, to the match that lasted about 30 seconds in Rusev and Enzo there, that I don't think I can in good conscience give it a full 7. I think I'm going to go with a 6.5.
And the MVP.
Okay, Harry.
I just want it to be difficult, Tony.
Difficult? You want to know what's difficult? There's a piece of tofu between the cabinet and the stove that I'm trying to get right now while we're doing a podcast. That's difficult. Carry on.
You know what this is. Yeah. This is Doug style. You got some OU killer tofu. Anywho, my MVP MVP for tonight is going to be Charlotte. Because since Rick gave it to both and Tony gave it to only Sasha, I'll give it to only Charlotte to even it out there. So that way they both share the credit for the evening. And I feel like that's the most appropriate way to go with it.
Well, that's very nice of you.
I thought so.
You guys, I got the tofu.
Oh my god. Oh my god.
If my computer were working right now, I'd totally be hitting up YouTube to listen to Doug.
Hold on, I'm going to take a picture of it for you guys.
It'll get posted into the Raw Reaction Facebook chat thread.
Yes.
Question, Rick.
Yo.
How would you like to be our official social media guy?
Sure. Sounds like work.
I was just gonna say we don't really have a Facebook presence as far as the actual show itself. Is there any chance you might want to work? You might want to create a page for the reaction.
I can look into doing that. Yeah.
I figured it'd be something, a nice little companion piece to put with the. To put with the show, we could, like, post our pay-per-view predictions and stuff that we do there and stuff like that, and people can follow along and make their predictions with us as well and stuff. That's just a thought that I had. I know the other podcast that I do has a Facebook page for it, so that way it allows people to interact with us on a regular basis as far as helping us pick up shows to review and stuff. So it was just a thought.
Yeah, I like it. Good idea.
Anybody got anything else to add here?
Good to be back. I'm very glad that we can figure out the proper, method to do so. I know that there's big news coming in the future. I'll let both of you guys know as well as the rest of the listening audience. But the Raw Reaction is back.
Yeah, it only took us about 2.5 months and longer in my case due to my personal hiatus. I think I came back for like one show and then we were done for a while. But like Tony said, I'm going to echo his sentiments here. It's good to be back on the air with you guys. We hope you enjoyed listening here and we look forward to bringing you many more episodes of the show. Coming up on the 3-year anniversary of doing this. Jesus Christ.
Aw, Puddin.
I'm shocked it took this long, Tony.
I'm glad Greg let you borrow his sound bites.
Oh, they're mine now. I run this show. And in true Tony fashion, my favorite sound bite.
You have a vagina!
Oh, it never gets old.
Can I just point out the irony of Tony playing an AJ soundbite and then a Punk soundbite back-to-back? That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're welcome! And with that being said, for Tony Acero and Rick Balon, I'm Harry Broadhurst. Thanks for listening, everybody. It's good to be back. We'll talk to you next Monday here on the Raw Reaction. Are we officially YW yet, or are we still DeMarco or ProWrestling.biz?
He's now putting it as Yes Wrestling. We have the domain. We're going to start the design pretty soon. Yes Wrestling is on its way.
Damn! This has been the Raw Reaction on Yes Wrestling Radio.
Deuces, bitches!
I missed that!
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.